Most US citizens do not accept as reasonable a road mobile missile loaded with nuclear warheads being driven through their town or city, past their homes, or near where their children go to school. Road mobile rocket launch pads, invented by Nazi rocket scientists circa 1944, give North Korea a strategic advantage. Whereas the precise location of all 400 of the ICBM silos in America is available on the internet, and on maps before that, North Korea TMS road mobile ICBMs are continually on the move here, so the Defense Department cannot easily target them for destruction before or during nuclear war. At Buckley Space Force Base in Colorado, analysts with NRO TMS Aerospace Data Facility examine satellite imagery from the minutes and hours before the missile launched off the truck bed parked in the dirt field. They confirm its identity as a Hwasong-17. Looking back at NRO TMS satellite images from earlier in time, analysts can see it was being transported along a dirt road to its launch location 20 miles north of Pyongyang. While very little is known all about the Hwasong-17A TMS warhead capabilities, quite a lot is known all about its rocket motor, the RO 250, including that it is Russian-made. In November 2017, North Korea first flew an ICBM powered by this motor, which led four missile experts, American scientist Richard Garwin and MIT professor emeritus Ted Postol, along with German rocket engineers Markus Schiller and Robert Schmucker, to sound an alarm. The Russian engine was probably stolen from a storage unit after the Soviet Union collapsed, a Postol tells us. A latter sold to North Korea. A theft of nuclear weapons and their delivery systems is often how nations accelerate their fledgling nuclear programs. Property theft saves a nation not just time but treasure by avoiding complex research and development programs. Back in the 1940s, after Klaus Fuchs stole blueprints for the atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki, he gave them to his handler in Moscow. From that moment, it was only a matter of time before Stalin had his own atomic bomb. Until the Hwasong-17A TMS Russian RO 250 rocket engine was put into play, says Postol, North Korea couldn't attempt to get a missile anywhere near the east coast of the United States. This likely theft by North Korea a fast-tracked in just 4 months a technical development that would have taken the Hermit Kingdom decades to accomplish, he says. Ted Postol and Richard Garwin warned colleagues about North Korea TMS capability in a 2017 paper. Postol is an expert on missile technology, a former advisor to the Chief of Naval Operations, and professor emeritus at MIT. Richard Garwin, having drawn the plans for the world TMS first thermonuclear bomb, knows as much, or more, about nuclear weapons as anyone else alive. Garwin has been at the fore of nuclear weapons development and national security ever since. He worked on developing the world TMS first spy satellites and is considered one of the 10 founders of the National Reconnaissance Office. In their 2017 paper, Garwin and Postol argue that because of North Korea TMS particular geographical location, traditional missile defense against their ICBM is near to impossible. There are blind spots around the North Pole, they write in their paper, and propose that the best way to defend against the Hwasong-17 is to fly armed MQ-9 Reaper drones, the big wing variant built during the War on Terror, over the Sea of Japan, close to North Korea TMS coast, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Ready to take out an attacking missile 240 to 290 seconds into flight, Postol clarifies. This time frame is imperative because just a few seconds later, the ICBM will complete powered flight and go dark, meaning it can no longer be seen and tracked by early warning space satellites. Satellites can only see hot rocket exhaust, says Postol. They cannot see the rocket after the rocket motor stops. This is a dark black hole in national defense against ICBMs, Postol and Garwin warn. 4 minutes, 30 seconds, Stratcom headquarters, Nebraska. Everyone at Stratcom has eyes on tracking screens. 4 minutes and 30 seconds have passed since the launch of the Hwasong 17. The ICBM is now in its last few seconds of boost phase. Once the missile enters mid-course phase, it becomes almost impossible to stop. Now is the last opportunity to shoot down the attacking ICBM, but this cannot happen because the US Defense Department has no system in place. AOE told all kinds of people in DC about this and all of them disregarded the idea, A Postal tells us. AOE proposed a joint initiative with Russia, A Garwin reveals. AO they also have an interest in keeping North Korea from launching a nuclear weapon. Just as we do. A but Postal a TMS and Garwin a TMS suggestions fell on deaf ears. There are no Reaper drones presently patrolling over the Sea of Japan to try to shoot down this attacking ICBM. 275 seconds pass. 285. The rocket motor burns out. Boost phase ends. The Hwasong-17 releases its warhead, which continues ascent. Mid-course phase begins. The multi-billion dollar Spurs constellation of early warning satellites can no longer see what remains of the North Korean ICBM. It can no longer see the nuclear warhead en route to the United States. The warhead has gone ballistic and is now all but invisible to the satellite AR-TMS sensors, coasting as it is on a high-speed trajectory to an apogee, or high point, somewhere over planet Earth. 5 minutes. U.S. Missile Defense Agency Headquarters, Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Missile Defense Agency Headquarters, Fort Belvoir, Virginia. U.S. Army. 12 miles south of the Pentagon, at Fort Belvoir in Virginia, personnel at the Missile Defense Agency at TMS Headquarters Command Center are freaking out. There is a myth among Americans that the U.S. can easily shoot down an incoming, attacking ICBM. Presidents, Congress people, defense officials, and countless others in the military-industrial complex have all said as much. This is simply not true. The U.S. Missile Defense Agency is the organization responsible for shooting down incoming missiles in mid-flight. Its flagship system, the Ground-Based Mid-Course Defense System, was built in the wake of North Korea TMS Accelerated ICBM program that began in the early 2000s. The U.S. system centers around 44 interceptor missiles, each one 54 feet tall and designed to hit a fast-flying nuclear warhead with a 140-pound projectile called an exotmospheric kill vehicle. The incoming North Korean warhead will be traveling at speeds of around 14,000 miles per hour, while the interceptor TMS kill vehicle will be traveling at speeds of around 20,000 miles per hour, making this action, if successful, akin to shooting a bullet with a bullet, according to the Missile Defense Agency a TMS spokesperson. From 2010 to 2013, not a single one of the early interceptor tests was successful. Not one. The following year, the U.S. Government Accountability Office reported the system was not really operational because AET's development was flawed. A that each interceptor missile was only a capable of intercepting a simple threat in a limited way. A after 5 years, and many billions of U.S. tax dollars spent, 9 out of 20 hit-to-kill U.S. interceptor tests failed, which means there is only an approximate 55% chance that a Hwasong-17 will be shot down before it reaches its target. At any given time, these 44 interceptor kill vehicles are on alert, siloed at two separate locations in the continental United States. 40 of these missiles are located in Alaska, at Fort Greely, and 4 are located in California, at Vandenberg Space Force Base near Santa Barbara. 44 missiles total. That is it. The intercept sequence is a 10-step process, 3 of which, in this scenario, have already happened by now. The enemy has launched an attacking missile. Space-based infrared satellites have detected the launch. Ground-based early warning radars have tracked the attacking missile through boost phase until mid-course phase begins. The attacking North Korean missile now releases its warhead and decoys so as to confuse the sensor system on the exatmospheric kill vehicle that is attempting to track, by sensors and an onboard computer, and intercept it. Distinguishing between a single warhead and other possible warheads and decoys in the warhead bus poses a new set of challenges for the U.S. Missile Defense Agency. These are challenges that must be dealt with in seconds, not minutes. For this, attention moves out to sea, to the classified, $10 billion sea-based X-band radar station, known as the SBX. 6 minutes. North of Kure Atoll, North Pacific Ocean. 20 miles north of the coral-ringed Kure Atoll, floating in the vast North Pacific Ocean more than 1,500 miles from Honolulu, the SBX radar station is a sight to behold. This one-of-a-kind, stadium-sized, sea-going, self-propelled radar station weighs 50,000 tons, requires 1.9 million gallons of gas to run, can withstand 30-foot-tall waves, is larger than a football field, rises 26 stories out of the ocean, requires 86 crew members to carry out its mission, and claims to be the most sophisticated phased array, electromechanically steered X-band radar system in the world. Sea-based X-band, SBX, radar at sea. U.S. Missile Defense Agency. The original platform of the SBX was built by a Norwegian company that specializes in offshore vessels for oil drilling. It was purchased by the U.S. Defense Department and modified. Now it houses the world at EMS most expensive missile defense radar, its bridge, workspaces, control rooms, living quarters, power generating areas, and a helicopter pad. The SBX was sold to Congress by leaders of the Missile Defense Agency as the most capable system of its kind, able to detect, track, and discriminate incoming missile threats. One catchy descriptor that SBX advocates use to explain how powerful the SBX is to say if placed in the Chesapeake Bay, its radars would be able to see a baseball-sized object in San Francisco from an observation post in Washington, D.C., some 2,900 miles away. This is true, sort of. The baseball needs to be hovering 870 miles above San Francisco in a direct line of sight with the radar in D.C. in order to be seen. The goal of the SBX is to provide U.S. interceptor missiles with precise data about where an attacking nuclear warhead is in the atmosphere, in mid-course phase flight, inside a very small window of time, as in seconds. Most Americans have never heard of the SBX and have no idea about its strengths, or its flaws. Mike Corbett, a retired Air Force colonel who oversaw the program for 3 years, had by 2017 already predicted it would fail. "AO, you can spend an awful lot of money and end up with nothing," A. Corbett told the Los Angeles Times in 2015. "AO billions and billions were spent on these SBX programs that did not EMT lead anywhere." A. Critics call the SBX radar system a Pentagon TMS $10 billion radar gone bad. A. By the time most people learn firsthand of the SBX TMS litany of flaws, it will be far too late. 7 minutes. U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command, Fort Greely, Alaska. To discern a nuclear warhead from a decoy is the job of the one-of-a-kind SBX radar system at sea. It is what taxpayers have paid billions of dollars to develop, and hundreds of millions more, annually, to maintain. A recent Congressional Budget Office report indicates Pentagon missile defense costs from 2020 to 2029 could reach $176 billion. In this critical moment, 7 minutes, after an attacking missile has been launched from Asia at the United States, U.S. national defense depends entirely on the exatmospheric kill vehicle, inside the interceptor missile, communicating with the SBX radar system in order to determine what it must hit to kill. Here in the Alaskan wilderness, 100 miles southeast of Fairbanks, a set of clamshell-shaped silo doors blast open. A 50,000 pound, 54-foot-tall interceptor missile fires up into the air from the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command, Fort Greely, with an explosive howl. In the history of warfare, the goal in battle is to meet attacking sword with defensive shield. The intention of the interceptor missile system is to shield the continental U.S. from a limited nuclear attack. AO limited A is the keyword here because the total number of interceptor missiles is 44. As of early 2024, Russia has 1,674 deployed nuclear weapons, the majority of which are on ready for launch status. China has a stockpile of more than 500, Pakistan and India each have around 165, North Korea has around 50. With 44 missiles in its entire inventory, the U.S. interceptor program is mostly for show. U.S. interceptor missile in boost phase. U.S. Missile Defense Agency. In press photographs released by the Missile Defense Agency, a rising interceptor missile in action is presented as glamorous-looking and powerful, with a plume of fire and smoke trailing out behind an ascending rocket body, on a backdrop of purple sky. In reality, it is far from salvational. As the interceptor rises into space, its onboard sensors communicate with radar systems on the ground and at sea in a process known as telemetry, the remote collection, measurement, and relay of data. When the interceptor missile completes its own boost phase, its exatmospheric kill vehicle separates from its rocket body and continues on ascent. This, allegedly, is the shield. This is what promises to keep an attacking missile from striking a target in the US. There is no other shield. This is it. A hit-to-kill means it must collide with the warhead to destroy it in flight, A. Richard Garwin clarifies. Missile expert Tom Carrico anthropomorphizes the process, explaining that now is when AF kill vehicle would open its eyes, unbuckle its seatbelt, and get to work. A. But the real-world capabilities of a warhead on a Hwasong-17 suggest there could be up to 5 decoys contained in its warhead bus. Will the interceptor succeed or fail? 9 minutes. Clear Space Force Station, Alaska. Roughly 100 miles west of the interceptor missile fields at Fort Greely, the powerful long-range discrimination radar at Clear Space Force Station gets its first sight of the attacking missile as it comes over the horizon. The Defense Department calls Alaska AF most strategic place in the world, A, when it comes to ballistic missile defense, and says that its long-range radar has the necessary AF field of view war to detect incoming threats. 9 minutes have passed. Inside the classified fire direction center, an airman seated at a desk picks up the red phone in front of her. This is clear, she says. Sight report is valid. Number of objects is 1. The dreaded secondary confirmation of an attacking ICBM, headed to the east coast of the United States, has just been made. The facility here in Alaska is one of several early warning ground radar facilities keeping watch for nuclear attacks since the early days of the Cold War. Other facilities like it are located in California, at Beale Air Force Base, Massachusetts, at Cape Cod Space Force Station, North Dakota, at Cavalier Space Force Station, Greenland, at Petafix Space Base, formerly Thule Air Base, United Kingdom, at Royal Air Force Fillingdals. For decades, these ground radar systems the size of small pyramids have been relied on to scan the skies for an incoming ballistic missile attack. To err is human, but machines also make mistakes. These same systems have been responsible for several near-catastrophic false alarms. Once, in the 1950s, early warning radars interpreted a flock of swans as a fleet of Russian MiG fighter jets en route to the US by way of the North Pole. In October 1960, computers at the ground radar site in Thule, Greenland, misread the moon rising up over Norway as being the radar returns from 1,000 attacking ICBMs. In 1979, a simulation test tape mistakenly inserted into an RAD computer deceived analysts into thinking the US was under attack by Russian nuclear-armed ICBMs and nuclear ballistic submarines. Former Secretary of Defense Perry tells us about the sheer madness involved when a persona TMS brain tries to process the horrific supposition that America is actually under nuclear attack. The NORAD test tape debacle happened on Perry, a TMS watch. He was Under Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering at the time, and for a few short minutes, he prepared to notify then-President Jimmy Carter that the dreaded time had come, that the president needed to launch a nuclear counterattack. Instead, that early warning notification turned out to be notification of a phantom attack. What came through on the computer was a simulation of an actual attack, Perry remembers. It looked very, very real. So real that he actually believed it was real. But back in 1979, instead of waking up President Carter in the middle of the night, as was Perry a TMS job, the chief nuclear watch officer on duty at NORAD that night dug into it further, and concluded it was an error, Perry explains. For several terrifying minutes, William Perry believed nuclear war was about to begin. ATMLL never forgets that night, he tells us, now in his 90s, and that right now, we are closer to having a nuclear war happen, even by accident, than we were during the Cold War. Either scenario presented here is a not fear-mongering, Perry confirms. That, rather, it should be understood is entirely possible, of happening. In the 21st century, U.S. satellite systems have replaced ground systems as the initial bell ringer in a sneak nuclear attack. Ground radar stations around the world exist to provide secondary confirmation regarding what the nuclear command and control system ostensibly already knows. What the Fire Direction Center has just reported in this scenario is not a simulation tape, a flock of swans, or the rising moon. It is real. 9 minutes, 10 seconds, U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command, Fort Greely, Alaska. The U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command at Fort Greely and the Clear Space Force station in Anderson sit roughly 100 miles apart from each other, as the crow flies. In this intense moment of missile defense, everyone at both bases is focused on precisely the same action, shooting down the attacking ICBM with an interceptor missile. Hundreds of miles above, up in space, the interceptor completes powered flight. Its boosters burn out and fall away. The exo-atmospheric kill vehicle in the nose cone is let loose and begins seeking the Hwasong-17 ATMS nuclear warhead by using sensors, an onboard computer, and a rocket motor designed to steer it to its target. The final step in the interception process has begun. The kill vehicle hurtles through space at a velocity of around 15,000 miles per hour. It opens its infrared AESA and tries to locate the target. Tries to find a signal from the warhead at TMS warm surface on an otherwise dark background of space. Once the kill vehicle locates what it thinks is the warhead, attempting to destroy it is an even more radical challenge. To destroy the warhead as it hurtles through space, the kill vehicle must rely on its own propulsive energy and an extremely precise physical collision. There are no explosives involved in this interception. This is where the akin to shooting a bullet with a bolter statement applies. There are significant problems. We know from the history of the interceptor program that its highly scripted tests have been riddled with failure. In missile defense terms, this means a disastrous success rate. In 2017, the tests plummeted to below a 40% success rate. Perhaps embarrassed by what it called air design flaws, the Missile Defense Agency announced it was giving the kill vehicle program a strategic pause. That the agency would instead focus on a new system it calls Next Generation. But as of 2024, all 44 interceptors remain on ready for launch status, despite the unacceptable flaws. The clock is ticking. Interception by the exo-atmospheric kill vehicle is attempted. The system fails. In immediate succession, a second kill vehicle from a second interceptor missile seeks the target and fails. Ground-based interceptors are not employed in what is known as a shoot, look, shooter type of profile. There isn't TMT enough time. The sequence is immediately followed by a third, then a fourth attempt. All four interceptor missiles have failed to stop the attacking North Korean ICBM. In the words of one critic, former Assistant Secretary of Defense and U.S. Chief Weapons Evaluator Philip Coyle, if you miss by an inch, you miss by a mile. The die is cast. The time has come, the president must act. 10 minutes. The White House, Washington, D.C. The president was en route from a White House dining room to a command center beneath the West Wing, when he was redirected to the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, a more hardened facility under the East Wing. This bunker, known as the PIOC, APOCAR, was designed during World War II as a place to hide President Roosevelt should enemy forces penetrate U.S. air defense systems and bomb Washington, D.C., with attacking aircraft. The PIOC is a location made famous in the weeks after 9/11 because it is where Secret Service agents took Vice President Dick Cheney in the heat of the moment after the national security apparatus realized America was under terrorist attack. It was from inside this fortified operations center that the vice president was able to override the official national command structure and assume control of U.S. military assets, including fighter jets, military departments, nuclear force commanders, and the defense agencies provide the president with the means to authorize the use of nuclear weapons in a crisis. U.S. Department of Defense. Guiding American decisions about nuclear war are a series of procedures and protocols laid out in AE highly classified documents, former STRATCOM Commander General Robert Kahler tells us. But America the democracy also releases information to the public a command structure and nuclear inventory included. From the unclassified AO Nuclear Matters Handbook 2020, our Defense Department Reference Manual, much can be discerned. A military command hierarchy follows strict rules. Each person carries out orders based on orders received from another person within the chain of command. Orders are delivered from the top down. Drawn as a diagram, the military chain of command resembles a pyramid of power. There are lots of people at the bottom. The president, as commander-in-chief, sits at the top. The U.S. president, who, as odd as this may seem, has sole authority to launch America TMS nuclear weapons. The president asks permission of no one. Not the Secretary of Defense, not the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, not Congress. In 2021, the Congressional Research Service published a review to confirm that the decision to launch nuclear weapons is the President of TMS and the President of TMS alone. AO the authority is inherent in his role as Commander-in-Chief, other research found. The President A does not need the concurrence of either his, or her, military advisors or the U.S. Congress to order the launch of nuclear weapons. A with the red impact clock counting down minutes, and seconds, until the incoming nuclear missile strikes its target inside the United States, the time has come for the President to launch a nuclear counterattack. This will get the blue impact, or counterattack clock running. On occasion, a debate arises as to whether America actually has a launch on warning policy. That the commander-in-chief really is expected to launch nuclear weapons while America is still under threat of nuclear attack, though not yet physically hit. Former Secretary of Defense Perry sets the record straight. We have a launch on warning policy, he says. Period. Full stop. In this scenario, the president of TMS advisors rush to brief him on counterattack options. To get the blue impact clock running. With the briefing underway, the 6-minute deadline for deliberation has begun. The president has just 6 minutes to deliberate and make a decision regarding what nuclear weapons to use and what enemy targets to instruct STRATCOM to strike. In the words of former launch control officer and nuclear weapons expert Dr. Bruce Blair, a 6-minute deadline for deliberation and decision is ridiculous. A meaning, nothing can prepare a man for this. It RTMS too little time, and yet this is exactly where we are. Standing beside the president in the PIOC is a military aide, known colloquially as the AML aide. A carrying the president a TMS emergency satchel, a handheld aluminium and leather bag also known as the football. This leather satchel is with the president at all times. Once, when President Clinton was visiting Syria, President Hafez al-Assad's TMS handlers tried to prevent Clinton's TMS Milad from riding in an elevator with him. AOE could not let that happen, and did not let that happen, a former Secret Service director Louis Merletti tells us. Merletti was the special agent in charge of President Clinton's TMS detail at that time. He later became director of the U.S. Secret Service. AO, the football must always be with the president, A. Merletti clarifies.